Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. As part of our continuing search for solutions, today we will talk about achieving economic security in retirement. People are living longer today. Experts expect that retirees will spend about 20 to 30 years in retirement. At the same time, there are fewer pensions available through workplaces. People will need to provide for their own retirement needs through savings and investments. Many people expect that Social Security will take care of them as they get older, but the reality for many people is Social Security will not be enough to provide financial security. Having enough money in retirement is particularly challenging for women. Women tend to earn less than men, take time out to raise children and care for sick family members and elderly parents, and women have less money to buy a home or other investments. What is the current economic situation of people facing retirement? Is there a train wreck coming as more baby boomers retire without enough money to live on? And what can you do to increase your financial security, as well as help deal with the national situation? Our guest today to answer these and other questions is a national leader in economic security in retirement. Cindy Hounsell is the president of WISER, the Women's Institute for Secure Retirement, a nonprofit organization that improves opportunities for women to secure retirement income and that educates the public about inequities that disadvantage women in retirement. An attorney and retirement expert, Ms. Hounsell has been widely quoted in media, such as the New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, Boston Globe, USA Today, and Newsweek. You may have seen her on ABC, CBS, CNN, CNBC, or the PBS program To the Contrary, a two-part award-winning series on women and retirement featuring her organization, WISER. We are fortunate to have her with us today. Cindy Hounsell, welcome to All Together Now.
Eleanor, thanks so much for inviting me to be here today. Appreciate it.
Well, I'm excited about this conversation because this is actually an issue near and dear to my heart as I kind of move into the retirement age or think about it and just see it happening all around me. And from what I hear, we as a country are kind of not in good shape on this front. But can you just, like, as a ballpark to get the conversation going, let us know how prepared are Americans to have economic security in retirement?
Well, we have a good percentage of the workforce that are not prepared and don't really understand the issues and don't have access at the workplace. That's really the hardest thing. First, I wanted to say that there's never been a golden age of retirement in this country. I mean, what happened is that people died younger. At younger ages than all of us are expected to. So, you know, we all know people living to 100 and 103 and 4. I see it,
right.
You know,
and that's like the fastest
network.
Growing
and
part of our population is people living over 80, over 90, over 100.
Exactly. And so, you know, my own parents died at 70, which was, you know, a little bit young at that point because I'm not that old, and it was unusual. But, you know, they were, if they had lived another 25 years, they would have been, you know, out of luck, I think, in many ways. And, you know, as much as people, you know, worry about it, people don't take action for themselves. And I think that's the biggest problem, the lack of planning and maybe being clear about what needs to be done, you know, that it will all take care of itself.
Right.
And it's 20 or 30 years, it doesn't take care of itself. And a lot of times, I'll tell you sort of what got me going myself, and I feel very passionate about this, but I also worry about the economy because it's older people that are, you know, usually spend a lot and kind of carry the economy since we're a consumer society and economy. And if they don't have money to spend, what's going to happen to all of it? And it's true all over the world. So it's not like we're the only country going through this. Every other country, you know, mm-hmm. is going through something similar.
Right. So we have here a growing population and, the people living long, which is great that we've extended our longevity. So instead of, you know, dying a long time ago was 45, it's gradually been going up. For a long time now hitting to 84, but yeah, now people going to 90, 100 as you talk about. But the challenge is, as we're living longer, is the danger is you could outlive the amount of money you have and run out of money before you die. So
right.
That's our big challenge here. And this is particularly challenging for women. And, you know, there's just so many different factors that come into play here, but what do you see as kind of the main factors that make women face really bigger challenges with economic insecurity and retirement?
Well, I mean, first of all, they end up with less money for their retirement because they earn less throughout their lifetimes, on average, of course, not every single person, mm-hmm. but on average.
Yep.
And then, you know, there are, at age 65, there are so many more, there's almost 6 million more women than men. It's like 5.8 million or, you know, in that vicinity, but almost 6 million more women than men, which is why I always tell the men, why are you talking about women all the time? I say, well, you know, there are just as many men that have these issues. It's just that they don't live as long.
Uh-huh.
And women live longer with chronic illnesses, not just from aging, because that's just what happens. I say it's the great equalizer. The men die and the women get to live longer, but many have chronic illnesses, rheumatoid arthritis, you know, things like that, that
uh-huh.
Make it not fun and mean that you have to spend a lot more on medical, conditions and
uh-huh.
premiums for health insurance and Medicare uh-huh. and all those things, expenses
uh-huh.
that people are not prepared for.
Right. Exactly. Well, you know, talk about women earning less, and that's true. You know, we've got still this gender pay gap at every level, except for, like, the very bottom where, you were talking about minimum wage. But once you kind of move up beyond that, at every level, women are paid less than men on the whole. So that gender pay gap in any one year is kind of a hit for women. But you start multiplying that year after year, and then that affects what women are going to have when they hit Social Security, because our Social Security is based on how much we've earned and how much we've paid in.
Right. And I think, you know, the caregiving, women, have always just, done what they needed to do, I think. And more men are doing caregiving, too, just because with people living longer, a lot of men care for, I hear those stories all the time from men who've taken care of their dads for 20-something years and, sort of do the uh-huh. same type of work, going after their job and, making sure that their dad's taken care of. And I have one colleague who tells me that his father, because he lives in an assisted living in New Jersey, and he's the only man in the building, and he goes down and gets his mail at 11 o'clock at night because the women all come after him.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I tease the men and I say, that's what's going to happen. I mean, anyone who's got a pension is going to be ripe for, for us chasing after them. Because so few people have that, but the men worked in the jobs that were more likely to have those benefits.
Right.
And that's sort of what got me started, was I had a pension. I worked at a company for 14 years. And then I ended up, they froze the pension benefit back in the 80s, which meant, it took about 30 years for me to be able to even get access to that money. And what happened was I sort of luckily left. Many of my colleagues didn't leave that company, but came to Washington, started working on a women's pension project, just kind of all fell into place for me, and I figured, well, I'll learn what it means to have a frozen pension. And, you know, what it meant was that my benefit was frozen for 30 years, so it wasn't going to be worth, like, a whole lot. It certainly wasn't going to carry me through retirement. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that I have it, because a lot of people don't even have access to that.
Right.
But, you know, it's a pretty small benefit.
Yeah. Well, and you had a wake-up call there. It was kind of, really kind of pushed in your face, like, oh, this benefit is now frozen, so I can't count on it for retirement. But a lot of people don't get that wake-up call. They're just kind of not quite sleepwalking, but kind of marching on with their lives and not really paying attention to it. And then all of a sudden, you're kind of facing retirement and go, whoa, I don't really have a lot of money here as I'm ending the end of my work years.
Right. So I'm a big believer, including for myself, work as long as you can, save as much as you can, because, you know, that's the only thing that's going to, you can really count on. I mean, you'll be able to count on your Social Security benefit, but, you know, depending on your age, I think we all know, you know, the numbers for the trust fund are that by depending on which year, the report for this year hasn't come out yet, but, you know, the numbers vary. Some people say 2029, 2033, 35. So the numbers on when there'll be a shortfall. So unless we do something to fix the shortfall, there'll be about a 21% cut, and it could be more as we go on, depending on, you know, the economy. And So, you know, you don't want to be 85. I mean, I always look at these numbers and I try to do the math and say, will I be dead by then? You know, will that happen to me?
That's exactly what I was thinking as you were talking. How old am I going to be in 2033?
Right. So, you know, depending, as I said, there'll be another report this year when the trustees report come out, and they'll say what that number is based on, you know, the latest statistics. But, you know, that's a big cut that could come further down the road. So something has to be done about Social Security, I mean, before then. And people have said that for years, and there's a lot of reasons why we're in that situation, which I won't get into.
Right.
But, you know, it's there.
For most of us, we're not going to be able to affect Social Security. I mean, obviously, it's something we want to think about as we're voting for candidates for Congress or president. So what is their stand on Social Security? What is their plan for addressing that expected shortfall? But really, I think the message is we have to take responsibility ourselves for strengthening our economic situation as we head into our older years.
Right, and everybody's situation is different.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like there's this one formula that you can say, well, this is what you should do. You know, it just depends whether you have a house, whether you have insurance, whether you're married, not married, you know, divorced. I mean, there are just so many things that go into even how you'll collect your Social Security. You know,
exactly. Well, I think you just came up with a few good actions people can take. You know, work as long as you can, save money as much as you can, and invest the money so it's going to grow for you and not just sit at a 0% savings account in the bank.
Right. And, you know, one of the things over the years people have always said to me, you know, the problem is nobody likes the word retirement. You need a different word. So, that's true. You know, we use the word retirement most of the time, but we have something called our training program. It's called Your Future Paycheck. And I throw that out to people when people say, oh, I have no idea. Oh, I think I had something over there, and my wife has something over here, and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, you know, wouldn't you know what's in your paycheck, don't you? I mean, don't you look at your paycheck, and don't you want to know that? This is your future paycheck. If you don't look at these numbers, you know, people are always finding out. We have someone who's a good friend and colleague that we do work with every year, and she retired 2 years ago. And so now we have her tell the story when she comes out to, you know, our sessions and things. And she says, you know, with all that she put into her planning, nobody told her if she waited five more months, she would have had $280 more in her retirement because she works for a state government. But nobody told her that. She went to the classes, you know. And so the point is you need to be knowing those things earlier on, not just before you're retiring, right? Because that's when the mistakes happen or that you don't get the complete information. So,
right.
Planning.
Well, and I think part of it is, you know, we're kind of scared of looking at it. For a lot of women in particular, they don't have economic security even while they're working. So the thought
right.
about actually saving and, you know, facing getting older without that paycheck coming in is really kind of a scary thing. So, and it does have that kind of negative connotation, retirement. I love it. Some of my friends who are retired talk about, they say, I'm not retired, I'm refired, because they've found, you know, activities they can do in their community or just different things they're up to that they're really enjoying
mm-hmm.
now. So they call it, they're not retired, they're refired.
I like that.
But at the same time, we need to be looking at the numbers and, you know, how do we take care of the bills as we do that. So you have this wonderful group called Wiser. What are you doing at Wiser to address this situation we're in?
Well, I mean, we do policy work and we try to, you know, to spotlight the issues for women. And, you know, every meeting or every opportunity I have, I, you know, say all those people that you say are vulnerable, those are mainly women, you know,
mm-hmm. Yep.
because, you know, the industry is very male. Also, the financial industry, although, you know, there are more women. You know, as long as I've been doing this, I've seen a huge growth in the number of women, but especially in the financial planning world. And I'm hopeful in some ways that I think individuals need, you know, to learn the systems they're going to rely on. You know, it's a big surprise for people, and I find this, it's got nothing to do with education. People either know this because they watch, you know, PBS, and so, you know, there'll be programs about this all the time, Medicare. But I seek, you know, counselors all over the country that don't know that when you reach 65, you're going to have to pay for a Medicare premium. People think they've paid that their whole life. Why am I paying that again? You know, once I take my Social Security, I don't have to keep paying my Social Security tax. So for a lot of women, especially moderate, average income women, that's a huge chunk of your Social Security check. I mean, the average Social Security check for women is around $1,100, $1,200 a month. So if you're getting a premium of 100-something, you know, it changed, it went up this year to 134 for first-time applicants, then that's almost 10% of that Social Security benefit, right? It's a huge
mm-hmm.
chunk. So that I've seen over the years as something else that really, you know, complicates things for people, because that's before you even, you know, buy a drug plan or, you know, do pay for your Medicare drugs. So it's knowing all those things the sooner you can. And as you put your, you know, you spotlighted the fact that people don't want to know.
Right.
And sometimes it isn't as bad because, you know, you may be getting more money, you know, you may be able to live on less, you know, live in a different place, but it's the planning that goes into that. Because if you don't plan, you know, it's every year, you know, I'll say to people all the time, do you ever notice your grocery bill going down every year? No, nothing goes down.
it's always
right?
going up.
Everything goes up. So,
right.
So at least having a plan or maybe moving, you know, near friends, there's a lot of talk about, you know, home sharing and things like that that are
right.
popping up. And I think, you know, the boomers will do that. You know, they'll find different ways. But you still need income.
Right, exactly. Well, and at Wiser, your group, you're doing the policy work like you're talking about, you know, spotlighting the issue. You're doing good public education. You've got some wonderful publications, and I've read several of them, and they're very clear and easy to read, and you've got some programs going. to help people understand, you know, people at all ages, people who are young, because obviously the younger we start on this, the better off we're going to be. But then all the way up to, okay, now I'm facing retirement. I haven't really planned what in heaven's name do I do now. So I love the publications and the programs you've got. It's very impressive.
Well, thank you. But, you know, we're like one organization.
I know, one
you know,
drop
that's
in the
trying
bucket,
to make
right?
a difference for women. And women need to, you know, as I say, women need to really, you know, pay attention. And, you know, when I say keep working, you know, my friends want to kill me. I mean, you know, people that know me, well, I want to retire. Well, you just asked me, you told me what you had, you know, go see a financial planner, see what miracles they can, you know, they can help you achieve.
Right. Right. Well, and you know, I've run into some of these financial planners actually for quite a while. My husband and I have been kind of looking for someone to help us with financial planning. And, you know, 30 years ago, we weren't really thinking about retirement, but a little bit and kind of, well, it's something we should be thinking about, but more just general increasing your, you know, economic strength. But it was just a parade of, it was all men, and it was a parade of them, and they all seemed to be selling something. And it really took decades before we got some really solid advice. And, you know, I've been in those rooms, as I think many women have, where there were these two men who were the financial advisors, and they just kept looking at my husband and not at me and talking to him. I was going, hey, wait a minute, I'm part of this family, and in fact, I've contributed equal amounts economically to this family unit. So, you know, but it's this kind of underlying sense, it's really the men who are going to be running the financials of a family. And, you know, it just, we need to have more attention paid to the importance of women. And also, just like if you're talking to a financial planner or advisor, make sure they're not there to sell something or to get on commission, that they're there actually to serve you and to help you.
Right. And I think it's important for women to speak up. I do a lot of, and Wiser does a number of webinars with financial companies for their advisors. And so I see, you know, it's true that most of the men, you know, that are part of the webinar will write to me. I mean, it'll be men, not women so much. But I see a big change in how people are approaching and making it much more holistic, because they see it in their own community all the time. So, you know, women really like being asked about, you know, the is there anyone that you're taking care of, and what are the caregiving needs of the family? Because a lot of times it's the in-laws, you know, or, you know, children coming back that are, you know, older children can be expensive too when they come with the grandchildren, and unexpected. And so a lot of planners are saying now, you know, that you need that emergency caregiving fund, you know, in case something like that happens that's unexpected as you plan for the future.
Right.
Well, so I think it's better, because the planners will also say to me that the women are there and they don't pay attention either. They look bored. And it just may be that they don't feel part of it. So,
right.
You know, there are, we have questions that women can ask on our website, you know, with financial planners, too. So.
Well, yeah, and I think a lot of women feel intimidated. They can't really follow the conversation, and some of the financial planners use this language and lingo, and you go, what is that? Because I grew up in a family where, you know, the conversation was not about where are we investing our money. The conversation was, how do we get the money to pay the mortgage this month?
Right.
And so, you know, there was no real financial education or training there. So it took me years of, you know, doing different programs and really trying to educate myself. But I wish I had found you sooner, because you wrote the absolute best document I have ever read on financial planning for retirement. And it's called A Simple Guide and What Everyone Needs to Know About Money and Retirement. I just love what you wrote. It's so easy
to
read. so simple, it's so clear, you explain all the terms, so it addresses, I think, a real need, because a lot of the other financial planning stuff is just like way over the head of beginners, and this is written in a way that everyone can understand, so I want to thank you for writing that.
Well, thank you, and I am a big believer that, you know, that's one of the huge issues, and working even with employers on, you know, when they spend a lot of money on bringing in, you know, providers, the people who provide the 401k and provide the education, and what happens is those people talk in acronyms. I've been there with, you know, other colleagues from Wiser, and, you know, we do our thing and tell women why it's important, because a lot of employers are really happy that we would do that program with them. You know, we'll just come in and tell their women employees. If the men want to come, they can come. They have wives, they have mothers, you know, that need this help as well. But just to explain, this is really important, and you have to pay attention to this. Then you have the next group come in who are telling them how their plans work. And someone once said to me, it's sort of like you're signing for the plan, because these guys use all of this. I mean, the women, too, they use the acronyms. They talk fast, you know.
Yep.
And if I didn't know all of this, I wouldn't be able to understand them either. So you have people there looking so confused. And, you know, you could jump in and explain, this is what they were saying, what we were just telling you about, you know.
Right.
So it's, you know, that's a big problem, because employers, even at your job, if you have a 401k or 403b, a lot of times you just don't get the information you need. I mean, you're really fortunate if you have like one-on-one financial planning. And we did a program with nurses about 5 years ago, and the FINRA, which is, you know, the Financial Regulatory Authority, funded that study. And one of the things we found with nurses who are highly educated is that they also had no confidence, and so they wouldn't go to the hospital, did these programs, they wouldn't go to them. And from, you know, after a couple of years of doing research and talking to all of them, having focus groups, et cetera, what we came up with was that they knew a lot more than they thought. But if they'd been to a bad program before, they felt like they were going to, you know, Algebra 3, and they didn't understand Algebra 1.
Right. That is
right?
Exactly
so,
right.
So what's the point of, you know, you have so little time, what's the point of going to something? And we had a lot of the women ended up bringing their husbands, and even the husbands would say, you know what, I wish I'd heard something like this or knew where, you know, to get the information so that I would have felt confident enough to ask. Because that happens to all of us. I mean, everybody's been in a meeting where all of a sudden it looks like everybody else is nodding their heads, you know. you
right.
may not take the time, you know, afterwards to find out what you didn't know.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's what I've seen, too. And you're right. It's sometimes the women as well as the men who are the financial planners talking fast, assuming people know. And I, you know, I'm assuming they're just doing it because they're used to it and familiar, and they expect other people will be, too. I hope they're not doing it because they want to make us feel confused and say, well, you have to hire me and put your money with me because I know what I'm talking about and you don't know what you're doing. So
yeah.
I think there's some of that that goes to work, too. But what we need is basic, simple, easy
right.
to understand information, and that's what you've got. And I'm going to recommend that every one of our listeners here go to your website, because you made this. Not only did you write the best thing ever written that I've seen.
Well, thank you.
but you're also making it available for free on your website. So I'm telling our listeners right now, please go to the website wiserwomen.org and go to the publications section and see this pamphlet. It's called Money and Retirement, A Simple Guide to What Everyone Needs to Know About Money and Retirement. And do yourself a favor, download that document and read it and share it with people you care about, because this is like your best guide to what you need to know so you won't run out of money while you're still alive.
Right. And one of the reasons that booklet was written was I ended up working, as I mentioned earlier, at this Women's Pension Project, and the stories were the same over and over again. And then one of the women's magazines, you know, magazines are so different today than they were, say, 20 years ago. I mean, the readership, et cetera. So I answered a question in a magazine that they had asked me to respond to a widow who was 79 and had thought Social Security had stolen her husband's Social Security benefit. He had just died. And I was sort of shocked that they got the largest response in the history of the women's magazine.
Really?
About this question, yes, from all these widows. And this is about 25 or 6 years ago. Because what people didn't understand, so then it was pretty easy for me to be able to say, well, now I know why widows are poor, because all the research, you know, reflects this. And the reason is that they didn't understand that what happens when your spouse dies is whichever benefit is larger is the one that you have, and the other one, you know, just goes away. It's a social insurance program, and that's just the way it works, and you don't keep both, and so your expenses don't go down, and people haven't planned for it. So, mm-hmm. you know, it was that's what prompted us really to start Wiser, because I could just see the same stories happening over and over again, and why we wrote that booklet the way we did. So we went to a foundation, the Heinz Foundation, right after Senator Heinz was killed in a plane crash, and we had worked with him and his staff on Capitol Hill. And then, you know, I went to them and I was showing them, you know, I showed them the letter from the women's magazine, and so I knew I, you know, that we were onto something there. And so they were willing to help us get that magazine placed in good housekeeping. And the shelf life of it has been wonderful, because people still write and say, you know, I got these for my daughters, now I'd like them for my nieces.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been around for a number of years. So,
yeah, well, I think it's a classic. And we can all still, it's all still totally relevant.
Right.
That's the fabulous
sad thing,
job.
It's all still relevant.
Right, exactly. So, let's talk just a little bit here for our listeners on some of the steps that you recommend, because you include in there a step-by-step plan to improve your financial situation. And, you know, the headlines that I have in a takeaway are, first is start today.
Right.
You know, like, don't wait. And then two, look at your Social Security and your savings and assets and see if that's going to be enough to meet your expenses when you retire.
Right.
And don't have a paycheck anymore.
Right. And
then,
I just want to say this as well, that this is a perfectly good time of year to be doing this. Because it's tax time, and so you have all of that information that's sent to you. You know, it's not like you're scrambling around through files looking for the last, you know, statement you got, maybe from your investment company. You have everything for your tax return. And so I think it's easy to look and take what you earned last year and subtract everything from it. So if that were $50,000 and you took out your taxes and your FICA taxes, your you know, everything, your Medicare tax, DC tax, or wherever you live, and you come up with a number and you see, well, after all of that, I had, you know, $38,000 in cash, or, you know, whatever the number is, and, you know, how would I make up that $38,000 today? Would I get $12,000 a year from Social Security, so then I'd only need, you know, $26,000 to be made up? Or would I, you know, would I move someplace else? Would I sell my house? Those are the decisions that you have to make. And it's not as hard, because often women are saying to me, when I hear the $1 million number, you know, you need $1 million for retirement, and, you know, that's out in the atmosphere, I just throw my hands up. I know I'll never
right.
have it.
It's
well,
too
it
overwhelming.
Isn't. It is too overwhelming, but it isn't that. So you look and you see what you're spending and then realize that you're going to have to come up with that for 20 or 25 years, and how are you going to do that? So, and if you're
right.
And if you're married, which is good, because then you have somebody else with a Social Security benefit and, you know, whatever else, a 401k or savings, hopefully.
Right.
I mean, I think young women should be looking for, you know, thrifty men or women, you know, who save.
Right, exactly. You mean in terms of looking for a partner?
Yes.
Yes, somebody, exactly.
Somebody who's going to work with you to save and make sure
right.
that, you know, you're
well,
on the run. And that's the best thing you can do is start early. I mean,
right.
You know,
the best thing you can do is start early. And when you see the power of the compound money, you know, start early, save, even if it's $5 a day or whatever it is you can save, and invest that money. And then over time, that just, it grows exponentially. It's impressive. I wish I had known when I was 20 what I know now.
Right.
But I read the story in the New York Times. By the way, our listeners, there was a great profile of you in the New York Times a few weeks ago, which is how I learned of your great work. But there was a profile in the paper about a young man who, I think he was 22, and he decided he wanted to be a millionaire by the time he was 30, and he figured out how much money he would need to do it, and he had a regular job. He was a well-paying job. I think he was earning like $50,000 a year. And he also said, well, that's still not going to be enough. I need to have another job. So he worked a second job to get the income, and he absolutely was scrupulous about saving money. He had a room in a group house and had low overhead. He would not buy coffee. People don't realize you go, you know, buy coffee at Starbucks, you're dropping $4 or $5 that over time, that really
right.
adds up. And he, sure enough, by the time he was 30, he had $1 million. I was like, oh, now he happened to be doing it and investing it at a time when the stock market was really going strong, which you can't always count on that, but over time, that's a good place to go. But just to show that here's a guy who started out with no inheritance or anything, but by working hard, making money, saving money, and investing, he hit the million-dollar mark, you know, in less than 10 years. So,
wow. Yep.
So it can be done. And
right.
so we know we want to start early, and people who are older should not despair, because even when, you know, if you're 50, 55, 60, or already kind of up there and looking at retirement is near-term instead of long-term, it's still important to, you know, start working today to do what you can to make, save, and invest funds.
I agree. And I think, you know, the other important thing to do is, if you can teach this to your children or anyone coming along, is to try to live below your means. I mean,
yes.
that's the answer, too, because there are always these things that come up, the debt that, you know, you spiral out of control. And, you know, it's you look, if you were saving a certain amount of money or trying to get rid of debt, it takes forever to get rid of debt. I mean,
right.
anyone who's ever had it knows that. And so I think, you know, really making sure that you don't do that throughout your lifetime. I mean, sometimes people have no other choice, but you know, making sure that you do something about that and, you know, live beneath your means. So,
yeah, I think that's great advice. Always, you know, spend less than you earn. There's a great book that I loved called The Millionaire Next Door, and it talks about these people in academia interviewing
right.
these millionaires, and the first reception they had, they figured, oh, they're millionaires, so we're going to have caviar and champagne and all the stuff that millionaires, you know, like to eat. And that when the people showed up, the millionaires showed up for the interviews, they were actually appalled that there was such, you know, waste of money on these extravagant things like caviar and champagne. And come to find out, most of the people became millionaires because they were very careful about what they spent, and they didn't, they were not profligate, and they saved a lot, and they invested what they saved, and that's how they became millionaires, by being very careful with their funds. So that is, you know, step one is start today. Step two is, and this is an important one for all of us, figure out what your Social Security and your savings and assets would be, and, you know, figure out what your expenses are going to be when you retire, and see if you have enough. And for most people, there's going to be a gap between what you have and then what you're going to need for spending on retirement. So, but just to kind of look at it and see what is that gap, and then start thinking now about how are you going to close that gap.
Right. I mean, another thing that people do, especially, you know, if they have a 401k or they leave a job, is they'll take that retirement money. A lot of people do that and spend it. And that's, you know, that's the biggest no-no ever, is to take that money and use it for something else other than retirement. So that's a mistake that, you know, a lot of people make, thinking
right.
It's, and women especially, because a lot of times those sums are not huge, and so they don't roll it over. And it's, you know, it's complicated to roll over money, but you need to do it, and you need to take hold of it. And there's, you know, there are places that actually do that for you and make it easy and help you combine your accounts. And we work with a group called the Retirement Clearinghouse that's trying to institutionalize this so that it will make it easy for everyone to do that. So you just know that I'm just rolling it over. And then, you know, there are things that people can do to, you know, to face facts like about long-term care. That's another big expense. And how are you going to cover those things in the future? You know, if something happens, what would you, you know, where would you turn, and make that type of a plan? And you know, people don't think about that either. So
right, exactly. And what do you recommend? Long-term care insurance, is that something you think most people would need?
I think it's so complicated. A lot of the companies have gotten out of the business because it's so hard to plan. It's one of those products that I always had hoped for by the time the baby boomers get there, that there would be, you know, there would be easier solutions, you know, like a three-year product rather than, you know, trying to figure out for your whole lifetime. I happened to work at a place where it was offered, so I just figured I bought it. It was, you know, it was a small enough premium when I started, and even though it's increased, it's still like way lower than anything I would have expected. But, you know, it's not so easily available. So I think it's good for people to investigate it and see what's there, but it certainly isn't being sold the way it was 10 years ago.
Right, exactly. And I met these women through my kind of a network that I'm involved in Washington, D.C., and they work with New York Life. And they do still offer long-term care insurance, and they have some great women working there.
Uh-huh.
So if that's something our listeners are interested in, that might be one place to check into. So we know we want to start today. We know we want to look at what is that gap of income, like will the money that we have be enough to meet our expenses? And then the third part on this plan is to invest and learn about the investment choices. So that was an area of, again, because my upbringing, I knew nothing about investment choices, and it's taken me years and years to figure all this out. But you know, there are obviously many ways to invest, but one of the best is with the individual retirement accounts. Do you want to explain for our listeners kind of what is an individual retirement account and what role that might play in their retirement?
Right. Well, you know, there are two types of individual retirement accounts, and Congress actually made that possible through a change in the law, I think, in the late 70s. And they're still not used in the way that they should be. because they were meant for people to supplement, say, their workplace retirement account and to, you know, to make up the shortfall. And what with the traditional account, if you want a tax break, you can use the traditional. You put money in and you'll owe tax when you take it out. And a lot of people use that for rollovers in the same way, you know, moving money. That's where most of the IRA money comes from, individual retirement accounts. Not from less than 10% of the workforce has used IRAs as an initial account to just start saving in, believe it or not. It's a really small percentage, but they use it to roll over. The best thing around, and it's not just me saying this, it's all of the experts pretty much say this, the John Bogle, Warren Buffett, is the Roth IRA, which is after-tax money. And any opportunity, if you're eligible, because if you earn too much money, then you're probably not going to be eligible. But the Roth IRA is after-tax. It grows, well, I used to say forever without being taxed, but if we have tax reform, one never knows what mm-hmm. might happen in the future. But right now, you never have to pay tax on that money as it grows. So it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's what I came to see. The traditional IRA is you get a tax break now by opening it, but you will pay taxes on what you put in and whatever that money earns over time until you take it out. And then the Roth IRA is you've already paid the taxes on that money that you're using. But
right, out
once
of your
you
paycheck
make an investment,
to save.
Yeah, right. but then any money that your investment you use with a Roth IRA, any money you make off of that investment is tax-free. You don't ever have to pay taxes on whatever the gains are.
Right. And that sort of prompts me to mention the MyRA. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I just learned about that by reading your materials. So tell us about the MyRA.
Okay. So the MyRA, it's if anybody is listening or they have children who don't have an account, the MyRA is a Roth IRA, and it was accomplished through executive action by President Obama. I think in 2013, he announced that, 2013 or 2014. And it was rolled out about a year and a half ago. And it's you can go to the U.S. Department of the Treasury website and find myra.treasury.gov. And it's a Roth IRA, it's tied to the Thrift Saving Plan interest rate, so it fluctuates. You don't pay, there are no fees, and you can't lose principal. And people should join. You can put as little as $5 in. There's no upfront payment. And it has the same tax limits that I was mentioning for the Roth IRA, that a lot of people would like to do that, but they're not eligible because they earn too much. So I think it's a great opportunity. You have to use a payroll deduction, but there's no startup costs, no maintenance fees, and there's no minimum contribution requirements, so it's a great starter account. That's what it's meant to be. And you can also put money there if you change jobs, and you can keep that, that account. It gets capped at $15,000, then you have to take it and roll it into a private Roth IRA. So,
yeah,
I think it's the best thing around.
I think my daughter would benefit from a my IRA.
Yes. Anyone who talks to me about this, I tell them just open it. I mean, you can move it to another Roth IRA. Well, you know, it's actually free. So why wouldn't you do this?
It's fantastic. So, another great thing that President Obama did, and boy, are we missing him. The other thing I wanted to mention in terms of investments, this was a big eye-opener for me. It's like even if you can save a little, whatever you can save to invest, if you get the money in the IRA, but then you still want to put that IRA money into some kind of an investment. So for years, I had my IRA money sitting in the bank account going, well, that's getting 0% interest. Let's make that money do something and have it earn more money. But I was nervous about putting it in the wrong place. So, and I was trying to sort it all out with all these people wanting to tell me where I should be investing. But I was so suspicious, like my father was, of a lot of these people. And now I see why he was so suspicious. But I finally came to see that the best advice came from Warren Buffett, who said, unless you're a full-time investor and know a lot about what you're doing, you're much better off put your money into an index fund that's not actively managed, because just an index fund that tracks whatever the general stock market is doing is going to, on the whole, will outperform pretty much all of the people who say they can manage the funds and they'll get you more returns and they're going to beat the market. That over time, generally, that's not true. Generally, just put it in an index fund that's not actively managed, and you'll make more money and have lower fees.
Right, exactly. And that's the difference between the different financial companies. You can, you know, you can find out which, I mean, they all have index funds. The big ones, you know, the names are out there. John Bogle started Vanguard. And I don't know if you're familiar with him. And he started Vanguard for that, so that average workers would just have a place to go. And he's big supporter of index funds. So, you know, you just look at the different companies and then see where you can get an index fund with lower fees and, you know, also with the amounts that they require you to contribute to get into the plan. So
Right. So that's something for, I encourage our listeners to investigate for yourself, is when you save some money, either just general money or your IRA money, to consider putting it in an index fund at Vanguard or one of the other places that have the low fees. And what about annuities? Do you recommend that? A lot of people are out there saying annuity, you're going to get lifetime income and you're not going to lose your principal. Do you think annuities are a good idea?
Yeah, I do. I think they're so complicated to purchase, but I do think they're a really good idea, and I think, you know, you, when you get older, I mean, it's a good way to manage your money, and also to keep maybe people from stealing your money, because you don't have it in some account that everybody's going to try to get you, including kids and, you know, relatives, et cetera, to spend money on. So you buy an annuity, and it will, you know, hopefully cover most of your basic costs. So I think the concept is really good. There are a lot of good companies selling them. And again, it's the fees and it's the bells and whistles. They are the most complicated product, although they are basic, you know, very basic annuities that you can buy. I just haven't done it. And I know about it. I know, you know, the companies. I'm fortunate enough that I have money where they offer that, you know, the Teachers Insurance, TIA, CREF, and so it was just, I was married to someone and I got my divorce money, which is something else we didn't talk about.
Yeah.
And
you definitely
so,
want to read
and
your
so then I got an
divorce
account there. And, I mean, they're just known for that. That's what they do. And I'm not saying anybody should go there. I'm just saying that, you can look at their, you know, they have a website and an institute, and you can read more about annuities than you'd probably ever want to read. And then, you know, what you have to do is go to different companies and price them. That's the harder part. And a lot of them have bells and whistles, or they're only for 10 years, or they'll cover a spouse, or, you know, there's just so many different ways you can buy an annuity. So, but your basic vanilla fixed amount, because you know your expenses, you know, you're 75 years old, you know your basic expenses are $1,000, then you can find out how much it will take to buy that annuity.
Right.
And it's for the rest of your life, so.
Yeah. So, interesting. You know, kind of stepping back and looking bigger picture here, kind of wondering, this issue of economic security is one that affects really everybody, but particularly the women. Why hasn't economic security been more of a focus for the women's movement? I mean, a lot of the women's movement has had a conversation around reproductive rights, which are, you know, critical conversation. But why isn't the women's movement talking more about and helping women more with this economic security aspect?
I think the complicated, you know, reputation that it has is that it's harder, and so it's, you know, and not as important. I mean, I look at this and think it's the most important issue for aging, because if you don't have income,
right,
you can't take care of any of those other needs,
right,
of which there will be many coming along that are unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, it's always bewildered me a little. I mean, we've always had champions. Carolyn Maloney, you know, from New York, you know, has always been a champion, as well as for pay equity. And for a time when the pay equity issue was spun a little bit differently, we always did an event about retirement income at the same time as pay equity. But there's just different players, you know, it's just done differently. And there are a lot of people saying that there really isn't an issue, you know, because you have the people on the other side saying, you know, that it isn't as much of an issue as it's been made out to be. So I'm surprised myself that I mean, I think that's why, you know, people call me to interview me, because it's not like there's 50 other groups out there doing the same thing. So I feel like, you know, I've been saying the same thing. People look at me like, oh, you're still doing that? Yep, still doing that. So
now needed more than ever.
I know. I went to a conference recently, the American Society on Aging in Chicago, and this friend of mine was saying, you're going to be gone for a week, and don't you get sick of this travel and all this? And I'm, you know, I'm thinking about it, you know, at my delayed flight. And then, you know, I get there, and, you know, we have all these people, you know, that I've known for a long time now. We do these sessions on, you know, retirement income, and people keep saying, please keep doing this, we need it, you know.
And right,
I sort of buy in for another period, you know, like, oh, okay. But yeah, it's amazing to me, because even I've had young women from Capitol Hill, you know, who come to me and say, you know, somebody just told me about you, or I'll do things with, you know, they have like an office for staff there, and because so many of them are so young, and many of them don't even go into the thrift savings plan, they barely even know about that, because they work, you know, they work long hours and don't take care of their own thing. And that's true of the young men as well. But they'll say to me, I just graduated from college. I never heard anything about this.
Right. No, exactly. It's so good you're there. And that's all the time we have, and I'm glad we had a chance to talk with you. For more information, our listeners can go to wiserwomen.org. Cindy
okay,
Helmsel,
we'll put some things up on the website that we talked about.
So. Fantastic. Thank you so much for being
with
us today.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Eleanor.
In case you've missed any of these programs, they're available in the archives. If you want to learn more about Breakthrough Solutions, go to thebreakthroughway.com. If you like this program, go to iTunes and like it there. Our theme song is Let's Give Them Something to Talk About, sung by Bonnie Raitt. I'll be back next Thursday. Thanks for joining us. This is Eleanor Lacaine with All Together Now.